Hello and welcome to Back Chat, your podcast all about scoliosis, yoga and back care. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry. I'm a yoga teacher, creator of the Yoga Berry Yoga for Scoliosis community and YouTube channel, and this show is all about supporting you on your scoliosis journey. So if you're looking for practical advice and inspiration on how to manage the condition with yoga and movement, then you're in the right place. Hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to Back Chat. So great to see you here. See, some of you are waiting already, which is fantastic. If this is your first time here, my name is Christine Jaregi-Berry, and this is Move with Scoliosis, which is our community all about movement with scoliosis. And today I'm talking about, well, I'm talking with the lovely Laura Gates, and we have to thank Lorraine for this fantastic opportunity to speak to her, because she said, I've been working with this lady on my scoliosis for the last couple of years and she's amazing. You really need to bring her on this show and have a chat with her. So thank you so much, Lorraine. We really appreciate it. And as always, obviously, if you are here live, please feel free to let us know if you've got any questions. You've got the chat here. Obviously, don't get involved if you're driving or doing anything else. But if you're sitting down and you've got any questions for us, just please put them in the comments or in the chat box, and we will get to them, of course. Good, lovely. So let me get Laura on here. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, everyone. Welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I am very excited, obviously, to talk a little bit more about clinical somatic education, which is quite a mouthful, especially if you've never heard the term. And we had a few years back, some of my viewers might remember this, we had someone here who talked about somatic yoga, so we can also talk about this. I know he had some of the similar training as you did, so there might be a little bit of overlap, but I would obviously love to hear from you and your perspective as well. So I thought, why don't we kind of dive straight in, because I know that as with so many of us, you have a personal kind of history with scoliosis as well. And am I correct in saying that this is what brought you into this work as well?
Yes, absolutely. I have a triple curve and sort of a medium to severe scoliosis. I did a whole dance career with it. Luckily, nobody ever talked me into fusion or rod, so I was able to have a dance career and still stay mobile and use this work to help my aging spine, and it does it beautifully. I was looking, actually. I had a background in dance, obviously, and in deep tissue massage, and I was really looking for work that involved movement, and when I found this work, I went, this is exactly what I've been looking for. And it's the work developed by the neuromuscular pioneer, the late pioneer Thomas Hanna. Mm-hmm. And he created a work with roots deeply and firmly in Feldenkrais. There's a lot of cross with there. It's our closest cousin. And there's elements of Alexander and our hands-on work, and really our roots go back to somatic pioneers that came before us. So sort of a new generation of somatic work, and Tom Hanna created some techniques that set this work apart from some of those other cousins. I had a scoliosis that, of course, you know, a back that would go into crisis often, and when I was challenging it as a dancer and later on as well. And this was the first work, I've tried many things to try and help my body and recover from injury and recover from back crisis. And this was the first work where I ever had the sensation of my spine decompressing. I didn't think that was possible. So if you have a scoliosis, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Kind of a jamming down of the spine. And and I tried all kinds of stretching and everything I could think of. But this clinical somatic techniques gave me the experience of more space and more mobility in my torso, and less compression in my spine. And for the first time, I could work with my body in this way and undo the spiral. You know, I'd start out in a movement class or whatever it was, or even with my own practice, and go, okay, there's that same old kind of clunky walk with the spiral. And by the end of it, I was spiraling the other way. I had freed up and had all this space inside, not to mention less pain, less discomfort and stiffness, etc. I worked with thousands of clients and taught as many classes, and I work with all kinds of issues, and it's really useful for many, many issues with far-reaching possibilities, areas that it can connect into, like psychological therapeutic modalities, and athletes and dancers love it, and great for many modalities that give muscular pain, obviously. But it's really gentle, so it's really versatile. Mm-hmm. I can work with someone high-powered athlete and give them tools that they'll use. I can work with someone older or more fragile or with very reactive bodies like fibromyalgia, things like that. And you can use this technique super gently, imagery with just a tiny bit of movement, all the way to athletic, and it's really effective in all those areas. So super versatile technique.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm just looking for a message that I got, actually. I got that today from someone, because I, in my membership, I knew that you were coming on, obviously, to talk about this work, and I have got a little bit of experience in some of the techniques, and I've done a couple of courses. So I did snuck in a couple of the exercises into our class in the membership on Wednesday.
Oh, great.
And she actually, one of my members sent me an email afterwards and said how much of a wonderful this class was, and that really put her in touch with what was going on in her body. And she asked me, "Oh, please, can you save this class?" So it's very, and this was literally just a couple of, you know, one of the simple things, but it can be so powerful, isn't it? Even if you kind of dial it right back and really kind of listen to what exactly is going on.
Yeah. It's surprisingly, it's a fairly simple in concept technique,
yeah.
And I'll talk more about that. And
yeah,
and can be very gentle, and surprisingly, big changes can happen in connections brain to muscle.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So what would you say is kind of if you think about kind of the maybe unique challenges that you've had with scoliosis and that your clients have had with scoliosis. Why does this work so well? What is kind of,
So scoliosis, along with a number of other kinds of issues that tend to be kind of deep, stubborn patterns of muscular contraction. And those of you who have scoliosis, you probably can relate to the idea of, like, you know, tightness near the spine, yes, but also in the rib cage and in the torso in various places. It's hard to get at. They're deep layers. There's other postural issues that can be stubborn as well, hard to get at, like more extreme kyphosis or lordosis, right? A real hollowing of the chest in, or or extreme lower back arch. And those can be present with scoliosis too. But usually scoliosis has to do with some side contraction because it's pulling the spine into a curve. And a lot of people have some of those patterns, but they haven't pulled the spine yet into a scoliosis. So it can work as a preventative for it as well, for scoliosis in particular. But what I find is this work is about let me just talk about pendiculation, which is sort of one of the main techniques that sets this technique apart that Tom Hanna invented. We use a number of other repatterning techniques, especially in our hands work, that we share with Alexander and Feldenkrais. But pendiculation is kind of the big guy that sets us apart. And it's a borrowed word. If you look up the definition of pendiculation in the dictionary, it'll talk about what animals do 40 times a day, which is a kind of like a stretch and a reset of muscles. You've seen dogs and cats and birds and animals in the wild do it. They'll lengthen out a leg from it, and it looks like a stretch. But if you study it a little closer, or if you look at our human version of it, a yawn is an original pendiculation. And if you just do a yawn for a moment, just like create that for yourself. And if you kind of let a yawn happen and that response in the body, you'll notice, yes, one side opens up and lengthens. But if you pay attention to the other side, you'll notice it does a nice, juicy contraction. It shortens. And if you pay attention to how it lets go of that shortening, it won't be a drop. It'll be kind of a melt, not a super slow melt, but it's not an abrupt let go. It's a melt. And I can get to meet Tom Hanna. I wish I had. But if I had, I would have asked him, did you start out with what a yawn does? Because the brain knows how to reset itself really beautifully and slow it down. I think he did. And make it fully voluntary, which is what he did. Right. And you end up with really, you bring, because it's slow motion and because you're paying attention, instead of the same old automatic lower part of the brain talking to the muscles, you then bring the old movement map and function up to the new learning part of the brain. You make it cortical. You work with the cerebral cortex and motor cortex, and you remake that map over over several repeats of this technique, where you end up resetting the signal from brain to muscle, creating the optimum resting length for the muscle. And you restore proprioception and connection. So it literally makes the tissue smarter. A lot of people, after they've done a little bit of pendiculation, they go, whoa, I can feel this part of the body. I'm not sure I ever felt it there before. It kind of gets into the blind spots, which is pretty fabulous when you're talking about those old stubborn crunched up blind spots. I have a place under my ribs that I fondly call my cabbage. And if I'm doing my practice regularly, I can kind of keep that area soft. And if I don't, or if I'm, if I injured myself, or if I'm carrying luggage and haven't tended to my body, that cabbage will get pretty dense over there. It's like, uh-oh, here we go. And so I have to get in there and very gently and slowly re-educate those muscles, reconnect them to the brain and bring them to a more optimum function. So that's, and if you're making that connection smarter, that's about coordination, improving balance. You can understand why dancers love this stuff, right? It's like hand them self-care techniques and make their body smarter. What's not to like, right? But of course, and everybody wants a smarter body. So it's nice for all those things. And it's holistic. Yeah. Talking to from your scalp to your toes and everything in between and finding those connections. And of course, your body is completely connected. If I have a locked up right side of my jaw and neck, chances are there's an aspect in my ribs or in one of the other hips. And those contractive patterns are part of the same conversation. And some release I may get with my client in their hip may suddenly affect their jaw, or vice versa. I've seen it happen many times, both directions, right? Because we're all one marvelous creature. We're not a machine that can be fixed. Instead, we are a reacting, adaptive, wildly intelligent organism very much capable of learning new things, including any old habit, shifting it to a new habit, and that's neuromuscularly, as well as every other level of being human, emotionally and behavioral aspects as well. So,
yeah, absolutely. So could you talk a little bit about, so pendiculation might be obviously a new word for a lot of people here, but I think you mentioned briefly this is not stretching.
Yes, one thing that it's not stretching. And if you're coming kind of from a yoga background, most people go, what do you mean not stretch? It's like, that's the main deal, right? So yeah, we might knock on the door of light stretch, but we're not going into a stretch that is a strong sensation of stretch. The reason being, we don't want to trigger the stretch reflex.
Right.
And the stretch reflex is the brain, if the muscle's being pulled a little too far, the brain goes, uh-oh, too far, locks it up again.
Yeah.
So, and in the case of old, really habituated lockdown muscles, it can happen for lots of things, right? That's the imprint of our history on our body. Any emotional or physical trauma or injury or surgery or repetitive motion, that can lock muscles down. And then the brain literally forgets how to let them go. So you start stretching muscles that are already not functioning at 100%, that maybe only have 50% of the range of motion or 60. You'll bring that stretch reflex will be triggered more easily and sooner, and you're apt to exacerbate the problem and make it worse for some things. So it's like pendiculation is the opposite of that. If you like, you could say it's sort of backwards of stretch. Instead of trying to force a muscle long, we're going to contract into the contraction that's already there. So the brain feels it gently, right? Not too much, not creating pain. One of our little sound bits is, you know, no pain equals all gain, right? We gently contract it and then really slowly melt it. And this melting phase, we want to really pay attention to all the details. So it might take several breaths to finish. And then at the end, I give it a third ingredient, which is an extra breath to fully let go. So the brain experiences that resting length. And as you repeat that, resting length gets longer, more effectively than stretch, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
And you've actually re-educated the muscle. Yeah, and I have to say there's two kinds of pendiculation. There's the one you use in your movement practice, and if you learn, although I just described pendiculation, it might seem simple and it's not complicated, but to get good at it, that takes some time to develop your skills. And then there's a second type, and that's assisted pendiculation. That happens in a hands-on session with a practitioner. And they give feedback to both the contractive and lengthening eccentric phase of the muscle, and touch cues and lots of other things, maybe encouraging movement and various things. We have a whole set of hands-on skills that we use. And that kind of ups the potential for learning, accelerates the learning.
Yeah. Too. So Laura, I don't know if you can see this. Laura is asking, is it like dogs do immediately after a long nap?
Well, so you've observed your dog doing that. Yeah, the original version of pendiculation, the kind of reflexive tool that all mammals do. Actually, I think it's more than just mammals. But yes, exactly. The original version of pendiculation, which is for us a yawn or like a morning stretch, a gentle stretch, that's what dogs and cats and other animals do. They'll lengthen and contract a set of muscles and then let it melt. And they'll do that, you know, maybe front and back, you know, up dog, down dog, how you see an animal work with its spine. And they'll go from being asleep to ready to go, ready to catch a mouse, ready to move, because they've reset their nervous systems. And they do it, a healthy animal will do it 40 times a day.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm wondering if humans maybe did that, you know, way back.
We would be much better off, yes.
We had to move in order to survive all the time. We weren't sitting as much. And maybe we worked with our bodies and checked in with it and did that reflexive original pendiculation more than we do now. The animals around us are a good example of
they are smart, and they know. Well, I wanted to ask you as well, when we talk about scoliosis, we always talk about the convex side of the curve and the concave side. So in my body, I always experience the concave side as the kind of the sleepy side, the side that I'm not so connected with, that feels like it's not really doing its job as it's supposed to. And then the convex side is kind of the tight and the angry side. I always find that it's the one, if I'm stressed or if I'm overdoing it, I can feel it on that convex side. Now, and I hear this from clients all the time, when we feel something is tight, I think for most people, it's a very natural, immediate response. Oh, I want to stretch it out. What would you say to that? Is that going to solve anything?
I would say sometimes a gentle lengthening of a place that's feeling tight might be relief. If you stretch hard into it, it might backfire on you, and you might want to experiment with a pedicellation instead. Mm-hmm. I know sometimes because of one of my curves goes up into my higher thoracic and cervical spine, and I have I'm 72, so I've got some stenosis and arthritis and all through my spine at this point, and I get some icky kinds of symptoms coming out of there sometimes, and I'll start to get some pain, and everything feels tight, but when I go to stretch it, feels like I could stretch it pretty easily. And so having learned this technique, I think, okay, where's the spot? What would I have to do to my head to trigger those muscles? Where could I lift my collarbone? Would that get right at it? And I very gently contract it, kind of pinpoint it, and then slowly melt it. And then when I get to what feels like an easy length, not into stretch, I pause before I get this sensation of stretch. Then I might take a moment to take a breath, give it an image, like imagining the vertebral spaces yawning open on that side, or like a little mouth going, oh, as I breathe in, and just give it an image to ease it out or into the space. So I use lots of images in my teaching because I find the body responds in a really smart way to images, mostly works for most people. Anyway, and then I'll go back and pendiculate again. And then I might reverse and pendiculate the opposite side, which would then, if I'm contracting the opposite side, that's going to invite that shorter area to yawn open naturally. But then you got some movement to work with. So that's a nice strategy with a tighter side, right? I would do both sides, actually, for anything, because we both do different things. And it's never simple, right? I experience tightness on the convex side of my thoracic curve, for instance. And it's, for me, it's that's, yeah, it's tight and a little cranky, but it's not, it's a little more of a blind spot than the inside, which I've gotten tons of change. Used to be my ribs didn't move on the inside of my thoracic curve. Now it's the most mobile side and the most changeable, but it kind of talks to me more. But for me, I get the most sensation or pain there, but not always. And it can change around. The issues can shift, I find, in a scoliotic spine, because the brain's trying to find balance, right? It's all the time trying to compensate and figure itself out. And so,
what I love about this as well is that you're not kind of telling us, like, for example, in some of the scoliosis, more kind of traditional physical therapies, we're very much taught to, yes, elongate, obviously, to lengthen the spine, but not to go we don't go into our scoliosis curvature. If anything, we kind of go against it. Yeah. So what I love, and you're actually giving us permission to go into maybe the curve a little bit, maybe just a little bit, and then kind of come out of it and play around with that.
Yeah. So it's pendiculation is a shift in perspective on what's mm-hmm. going on with the muscles and how to re-educate. I'll give you a story of one of our students in Canada. She was a physiotherapist. She was getting her PhD specializing in Schroth method for scoliosis. She has a substantial scoliosis. I can't remember how many degrees, but an S-curve, quite substantial, just rotator ribs a lot. The first time she took a class in clinical somatic education, she was scared to move. It's like, they go, what? Ask me to go into my curve? She was like, no, I can't do that. She felt really scared to go into her patterns. But she did it. She gave herself to this new idea, experimented with it. By the end of the class, she said she felt space in her torso and movement in her torso, like in a way that she never had before in her 30-something years. So she hung a right and dove into this work, like out of the medical world into the land of somatics. She's helped a lot of people with curvy spine since. So that just gives you a clue. Yeah, the medical model tends to be, I mean, I'm sure Schroth has some good things to offer. I've not gone there because she said it's the medical model, which is only stretch and don't go into the pattern and hold the body and everything that we don't do. That doesn't make any sense to us because we know what a movement approach can do. Hmm. So
how would this, I'm now, obviously I'm talking also for some of the people who've maybe had a spinal fusion, right? Who've maybe got a fusion from the neck all the way down to the base of the spine, and they might not be able to do some of those movements. How do you approach this for those clients?
Yeah. With fusion or rods, you've then taken away the movement potential of the spine. However, the muscles around there, they're not getting much movement, and then get really cranky and really tight because they're not giving much movement. And can you pendiculate those muscles even though the spine isn't helping the movement? The answer is yes. You have to use imagery. If you think about, all those, a lot of those back muscles can be affected by the shoulder, the shoulder girdle, the spiraling in and out, from the hip movement, from anything that can move can affect those muscles. And imagery is very powerful, right? That's why I love imagery, because you can get at muscles that maybe don't have access to in the normal way. So even with a spine that's fused, small or large or whatever it is, the ribs can still move, and you can change the intercostal muscles and lots of other muscles involved with breathing. I like to work from the diaphragm and lungs, so you're working from a deep place in the pelvic floor and the tongue and all those things. You can evoke change, but it's a little different approach. And with fusion, I always ask my clients or students with fusion to just consider that, yes, they got a piece of their spine, however big or small, that can't move, and you want to protect the vertebrae above and below. Obviously, those are the ones taking the brunt of the movement, and they're vulnerable to injury, and it's a classic place for injury post-fusion. So, but we want to keep the rest of the spine as pendiculated and juicy and mobile as possible, because it has more work to do, if anything. And so I'll have people back off a little bit. Yeah, less is more. Gentler approach. Don't even use your full range of motion. Certainly don't force your range of motion. Just thinking about those more vulnerable vertebrae, so you protect them. And so it's a little different recipe for people who have fusion. But I have lots of folks I know and that I've worked with fusion love this work, and it's really helpful. And you use pain as your barometer. You don't push into pain, you don't push into stretch, go under the radar of those things and get as much shift and change to the muscle and restoration of its movement as you can with pain as your barometer.
Yeah, sounds amazing. So What are some of the if people are kind of brand new to this topic and to this work, and they want to kind of find out a little bit more, what's a good way in to, because I would imagine this is a big subject and
it's a large body of work. Movement Secrets, yeah. Tom Hanna himself did a lot of teaching, so there's recordings of him teaching when he did that in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and there's lots of us who have taken his techniques now, and you know, a lineage of development, because everybody that, you know, the work in this hands, we bring what we know to it and develop. You know, it's like I noticed he didn't have a lot of movements that address the psoas and hip flexors, which are kind of crucial to everything, right? Psoas runs right through the middle, and I find it affects all different kinds of movements. So right away I brought a psoas pandiculation, different angles, and both from flexion of the spine and extension of the spine, and it's really effective and great and makes a big difference. You release the psoas and suddenly you get more space and mobility above, way above where the psoas is. And you can pendiculate literally every muscle in the body. And what I love about it versus massage, I love doing massage, but I couldn't get to some muscles comfortably or safely, like scalenes, for instance. They're real deep and they're really important. If somebody has a real red light posture, we call that red light posture, when the front of the body is contracted, the back of the neck's contracted, scalenes can be wicked tight and really causing trouble, even impinging, you know, the brachial nerve, lots of things. So to massage those muscles was so not fun and really difficult. To pendiculate them, piece of cake. You just create a movement that teaches them something new. Same thing with the psoas. If you've ever had a massage of the psoas muscle, it's terribly uncomfortable. And you're like reaching in there. Well, I didn't enjoy doing it. I didn't enjoy receiving it. And yeah, you could get it to release with, you know, a certain massage stroke, but it's so easy, so much easier to do it. And I can teach you how to do it yourself. And I release my hip flexors every day. That's an everyday move for me. So how to learn some of this? On my website, there's a couple of very basic moves, which you can explore in a free video. If you go to the training company that I work for, Essential Somatics, based in Colorado, they have a number of free introductory things. You can get a sample of some basic moves, and you can take a full course, and lots of wonderful teachers and practitioners around the world. And you can find us. If you can get a hands-on session, I'd highly recommend it, because that interaction, two nervous systems together to help make shifts in the body, is really wonderful. And then you take that new knowledge, that accelerated learning, back to your practice. But it's the centerpiece of it is movement and your practice. And you can take classes online or in person, depending on where you are. And people can, if you want to contact me and ask me to help you find somebody nearby, I can do that. We also have, at ES, we train movement teachers. So not all of us are hands-on practitioners. That's a three-year training and a bit more involved. But we have movement teachers that have skills to teach this work. And we've got lots of them in both sides of the ocean and in Australia and lots of places. So. So I just wanted to say one thing I didn't say is another thing that sets this work apart is it's based on three main reflexes that Tom Hanna identified as having to do with movement and posture. We have lots of reflexes, right? That's part of what makes us adaptable as humans. And these movement reflexes are red light, which, you know, is startle response. You can just do it if you like. Tighten the front of your body, bring your shoulders forward, maybe tuck your tail. And if you're keeping your eyes forward, you'll notice the back of your neck is connected, contracted. Right, familiar for everyone, right? So, and if those muscles get habituated and tight, you're affecting lymphatic drainage. All this crunch and tight in your neck is affecting everything in your head. Pelvic floor tight, that's affecting everything that goes through it. Probably if you're a red light person with really tight ribs, you're not getting the breath you should have. Repattern those muscles, you restore more oxygen. Then the organs get a lovely massage every time you breathe. More movement equals better health, basically. How about green light? That's the one that contracts the back of our body, brings us erect. Fabulous reflex, right? That's the one that moves us forward to get the job done and literally contracts every time we take a step, falls us forward, a controlled fall forward. That green light reflex, however, if it gets triggered a lot pretty soon, like someone very driven or lots of other stresses around moving forward, get, you know, deadlines, earning living, all that kind of stress that happens a lot in societies like ours nowadays. That if it gets tight, that prevents breathing too, and classic lower back ache. You know, that used to be when Tom had to develop this work, that green light reflex was the biggest complaint, lower back pain. And, you know, the jamming up of the spine in that way. Now it's still an issue for sure, but a lot of people, because of technology, have caved in, right? All the teenagers and little kids are curled over everything. They've learned this red light reflex from activity that's habitual. And then the third one, which he named trauma reflex, probably referring to physical trauma, because if the side of your body is contracted, it's probably in response to an injury, right? Break your ankle or sprain your ankle. There's a component of contraction, a cringe that happens up in the torso as well. And if you have injuries to the side of your body, like if you crash and fall off bicycles or horses, or if you get an appendectomy, that's a one-sided event. And the imprint of those events will be the body's tight down. And a lot of scoliosis begin with a series of injuries like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not that simple. Anybody that's done some research on scoliosis knows that, in fact, some people are more likely to get scoliosis than others. And you may have structural issues like a slightly longer leg, which is going to tilt the pelvis. Of course, the brain's going to create a bunch of curves on top. It's an adaptive response. And congenital reasons, you know, the vertebrae can form differently. And they now know that there are markers in the blood that can predict whether your spine might scoliate at a certain age more than someone else's. So interesting. This seems to be like a genetic or hereditary aspect.
Wow, yeah.
And lots of other things. And a lot of times they show up and nobody knows why they show up, these curves. It can happen really suddenly or slowly over many years. So yeah. People are going to say, could I get rid of my scoliosis with this work? If you have a really tiny couple of curves, maybe you can actually make a shift in the muscular tension in your body with this work and get rid of it. Maybe. I've seen that a couple of times. For most people, though, it's deeper. It's more stubborn. And I don't expect to ever get rid of my scoliosis, but wow, functionally, it's a whole nother story. I've gotten rid of a lot of pain and created mobility I didn't have and have more breath, and I feel it affecting the organs a lot. And even though I've got all these, you know, like old ladies cranky stuff happening with my spine, typical stuff with any older body, but especially with scoliosis, like a shifting lumbar vertebra, spondylolisthesis, for instance, it can happen depending on what I do, but I can get on the floor and I can fix myself. I can shift it back. If it's in a real crisis, it might take me a couple of days, but sometimes I can. And I take care of my spine. I don't slump for hours if I'm smart. Yeah. You know, I move a lot. I walk. I do my somatic practice and it helps so much. I can't tell you. it's so
good. Yeah, I think, you know, this is a big, I know it always starts with how can I get rid of my scoliosis, and show me the two exercises that will, get rid of my scoliosis. But really, as you say, it's about looking after yourself, and just as you clean your teeth regularly and floss your teeth, you need to look after your spine as well, and do something for your body, your whole life, really.
It's a practice for life, really, and it's an issue that, here's an interesting thing about the brain in terms of can I fix this, is I remember getting all kinds of wonderful, you know, my low shoulder came up a bunch. I had all this movement and had before. I was so pleased after several years of using these techniques. And then I had a really intense fall on the subway stair in New York City. I slipped and went crashed down on the stairs. And it's like, you know, the kind of injury where I didn't break anything, but I kind of couldn't move for a while. And when I got up and looked in the mirror, my scoliosis had crunched down with a vengeance. And I went, oh no, don't let it be true. I've gotten so much improvement. And I got a couple of hands-on sessions to help me out of that. And I got my butt on the floor and spent some hours with these techniques over. And in about a week, I had restored to my level of improvement. But that taught me something interesting, that the brain, in response to a trauma, like that painful fall, and I would say probably in response to emotional trauma too, will jump back to an old familiar habit. We're kind of like that, aren't we? You know, even with emotional things, we may pull back when we're scared or stressed or upset to some old habit of behavior. And I think neuromuscularly, it's the same. We'll jump back to something familiar, even though that's not an improvement. So that was interesting to learn, that quality of the brain, or to learn it firsthand.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. So we are very lucky because you are coming to teach us in the Shine membership. You're doing a workshop on the it's in a month's time, isn't it? On the 5th of October. Can you tell us a little bit, just a little bit of a teaser? What are we going to do in this workshop?
Yes, and I have 2 hours to teach that workshop, right?
You do, yes.
So I'll do a little explanation in the beginning, just to set the stage for it. And then we'll dive right in and learn some somatic basics. And even though, you know, your first introduction to this work, I need to introduce you to the basics, but we'll already start bringing in some strategies for spirals and curves of the spine, and some of the issues that come with scoliosis as best we can.
I know it's a short amount of time. I'd love for you to do some sort of neck release, because this is something that I always get asked about, and especially with thoracic scoliosis, as you say, an upper thoracic curve, and people who might even have a compensating curve in the neck. That would be amazing if you can show us a few techniques there.
I will, and I'll even bring in jaw movement, because it's very common to have jaw tension for lots of people, which has everything to do with neck tension. And even a little bit with the tongue, because the pelvic floor responds to the tongue. And I'll bring images of the diaphragm and lungs, so I like moving from real internal places. One, you don't over effort it, maybe push it too hard, which is common when you're first learning these techniques. And two, it just wakes up your insides wonderfully. So you'll find all those things. And yes, I promise we'll do some good things for many aspects of movement of the neck, and hopefully elongate your spine nicely and maybe turn you into an owl. Who knows?
Exactly. That's what we want, really. Be an owl. Good. So we've got all the links in the description below. If they're not there, I will check afterwards, making sure that if you wanted to, so anyone who doesn't want to join the membership but still wants to join the workshop, you can also do that. So you could just sign up for this one workshop with Laura. Talking about scoliosis, obviously. What else have you got coming up, Laura? I know that you're doing some traveling. You've got some more in-person trainings coming up.
Yes. I just wanted to say, if anybody has a special request for that scoliosis workshop, go onto my website, lauramgates.com, which I believe is available to you there, and you know, contact me and say, my scoliosis, I have this happening, or I have a chronic pain here, or, you know, could you include something? And as best I can, I'll respond to the request you make. So don't hesitate to do that. So yes, I do a lot of independent teaching as well as being a trainer for ES. And my upcoming work will be, I'm scheduling one-on-one in-person hands-on clients in New York City from October 4th through 14th. That's filling up fast. So get a hold of me soon to schedule a session, because that will fill up. And then I'll go to Vancouver Island, where I'm teaching a retreat. It's an annual retreat. I did it last year as well. That's full, unfortunately. It's fully booked. It's at the OHM Retreat Center, sponsored by TOPS, which is Twisted Outreach Project in Vancouver. And they're all about scoliosis. I've done some online teaching for them too. And then I go to Edmonton, Canada. And that's a weekend workshop, a two-day workshop. And I'll work with clients following as well. And there is room in the Edmonton workshop. And Edmonton's a great town if you're anywhere that end of the U.S. or Canada. Check that out. And that's that Edmonton workshop is October 26th and 27th. And you can find that on my website and details about it. And you do need an introduction to the work before you come to that workshop. So it's not for absolute beginners. I want people to have, you know, just a little feel for the basics under the belt before they join. So you can ask me about that and how to do that.
Yeah. Brilliant. That sounds amazing. Lucky Canadians.
Yeah, we graduated classes in both Edmonton and Calgary. So there's a bunch of wonderful practitioners and movement teachers, somatic movement teachers there. At both ends of Canada, actually.
Lovely. Well, it's been a little bit quiet in our chat here, but I'm sure people are soaking it all in. And obviously, you can still leave us your comments afterwards on the video. We'll have a look, obviously, as well. Keep an eye on it. And then if you've got any questions, you've got Laura's details as well in the description below. So thank you so much, Laura, for your time. It's been amazing. And yeah, really look forward to having you in the membership.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Christine, and letting me talk about what I like to talk about the most. And I look forward to teaching for your platform.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, I would be super grateful if you could leave me a 5-star rating and review, which will help me to create lots more amazing content. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram at yogaberry.scoliosis or visit my website at www.yogaberry.net.